Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vurudhadi. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vurudhadi. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Teeravana Chari Yamuna Teeravana Chari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vurudhadi Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vurudhadi Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Teeravana Chari Yamuna Teeravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajika Acharya Stuttara Sutta Shri Shimad His Divine Grace Lacey Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai All grace to the assembled devotees All grace to Shri Shri Guru Gaurango I hadn't thought of this before, but as I was singing, I was saying, maybe I should say something about my own mother. I come from a large family, 10 children. My mother had 10 children in 13 years. And one year, this was after I had was grown up in a way at home in college, she was named Mother of the Year in the state of Vermont. So she was a very nice lady. She was a school teacher. And took good care of us. I have no bad thoughts about my mother. So, all glories to my mother, Jean Comtois. So I was saying, actually, I looked online to see where does this come from, this Mother's Day, because I tend to be a little cynical about all these this day, that day, you know, because we know what it is about, ultimately. It's about the, you know, the floral industry and the greeting card industry, and, you know, it's about retail sales, generally. But it had a more auspicious beginning. Back in the early 1900s, there was a woman named Anna Jarvis. She's the one who got it started. She was inspired by her own mother, who was always sort of like campaigning that mothers be given more respect. And she sort of passed on that mood to her daughter. And her daughter celebrated and organized the first Mother's Day at some church, I forget where it was. And then she started going after politicians to try to make it official, and she was successful ultimately to get it as an official U.S. holiday. So we celebrated, and of course, again, you know, there are commercial interests, but it's a nice day. In fact, what this Anna Jarvis, she became one of the most outspoken opponents of what Mother's Day became because of the commercialization of it. She thought it should all be about heart. Of course, this was happening in the early 1900s. People used to write letters and put them in the mail and that kind of thing. So she thought that, you know, daughters and sons should write something to their mother for Mother's Day, thanking her and showing their appreciation. And she didn't like that it came to be pre-printed greeting cards that you just put your name on and you send it to your mother and so on. And other ways that it was becoming commercialized, she didn't like that. So she was quite outspoken about that. She thought it had lost the purity that she would originally inspired her to push for it. So of course, in Vedic culture, there's a very wonderful tradition of honoring the mother. Of course, in the Bible too, also we have one of the commandments, honor thy father and thy mother. So in most cultures, of course, there tends to be this, in any decent culture, respect for the mother. So we have the verse from, this is actually from Chanika Pandit. Chanika Pandit, Prabhupada would refer to him as he wrote the Niti Shastra. Well, he didn't actually write it actually as a book, but different things that he wrote and spoke, they've been accumulated over the centuries, combined together in what's called the Niti Shastra. Niti is about codes of conduct, you can say. Prabhupada would refer to him as a politician also because he was an advisor to the king. But he spoke a lot about, you know, ordinary life, how to live a good life, basically, wisdom for living in the material world. So he came up with this list of seven mothers, which is the one that's generally referred to. It's not straight from the Vedas. He just put it together himself by examining different teachers' teachings from the Vedic literature. So it's Atma Mata Guruvar Patni Brahmani Raja Patnika Denu Dhatri Tata Prithvi Saptaita Matara Smrita. So this lists the seven mothers. I'll go through the list and say a little something. The first one is Atma Mata, which means your birth mother. Prabhupada said the mother is the first guru. Of course, that's natural because the mother spends so much time with the child. So even if she's not speaking, of course, she's transmitting so many things to the child. So the child is learning everything. Most children, they learn to talk from their mother. So what's more valuable than that? So she is the first one. And of course, it's a great responsibility. It's a huge responsibility to be a mother. And Prabhupada would often lament of how degraded motherhood had become to the, you know, the despicable depths of depravity. Killing your own child within the womb. So such a thing is can't even imagine in an actual real human culture. So that kind of thing was unthinkable previously. So there was a lot of respect. We see it especially in traditional cultures, especially more today. In Western culture, it's not so much there. But we see it in Indian culture, of course. The Indian boys are very, very attached to their mothers. They're not afraid to show respect to their mother and touch the mother's feet and so on. You know that story of Brahmananda and when he got initiated, Brahmananda and his brother Gargamuni, and the mother was there. And actually, one funny part of this is that Prabhupada asked her for a donation. She said, "I'm giving you two sons. What more do you want?" So during the ceremony, Prabhupada told the boys to touch the mother's feet. So that was, you know, pretty unusual for New York boys to do that kind of thing. But Prabhupada asked them to do that. Show respect to your mother. And he would often say, especially when parents would come to visit him, he would say, good parent, your son or its daughter is a very good person. That means you're good. He would see it like that. Good children come from good parents. So a good son comes from a good mother. So Prabhupada would, of course, and he also emphasized in his own society that the first responsibility of the mother is to see that the child is taken care of very nicely. So we have so many examples in our Srimad Bhagavatam and other places. I'll touch on some of those after I go through this list. So Atma Mata, the next one is Guru Patni, which means the wife of the teacher or guru. We tend to think of guru in a certain way, but the word actually just means a teacher. Any kind of teacher is called a guru. That's just the Sanskrit word for teacher is guru. So we have a spiritual guru, we have Siksha Guru, Diksha Guru, and so on. We think of it that way. But any kind of teacher, now traditionally in Vedic culture, the boys, the young boys at least, they went to the Gurukul. The Kula actually means family, but you could say the home of a guru, a Brahmin man, and his wife. Almost exclusively, it was husband and wife who ran the Gurukul. I myself was an ashram teacher for only 1 year. But one thing, I was just by myself. I wasn't married. I was a brahmachari. And I had boys who were from age 4.5 to 8. So young boys. And one thing I noticed quickly was these boys need a mother around. I can't fill that role. It wasn't that I've actually very good arrangement, actually, to just have a brahmachari with these little, because, and I was, you know, as a brahmachari, I was thinking these boys should be brahmacharis, you know, they're young brahmacharis, but they wanted their mothers around naturally. So at that young age, so traditionally the Gurukul was husband and wife. And the Brahmin, the men, of course, in Vedic culture, they tend to be in the role of the teachers. But the mother was also respected as very important, Brahmani. Actually, the next one is Brahmani, but this here specifically says the wife of the guru. So the wife of the guru is respected like the guru. So, Atma Mata Guru Patni Brahmani. So Brahmani means wife of the Brahmin. Again, we have this emphasis on the men's side, which tends to be, in our literature, it's written that way. So the Brahmana, but the Brahmana's wife is the Brahmani. So the Brahmins are, of course, very highly respected in Vedic society because they're the teachers. And they're the head of society, as Prabhupada would often point out. They're the brain of society. Their business is actually to study the Vedas. That's the main occupation, to study the Vedas and to teach it. And that's why they were supported by the other classes, you can say, castes of the Vedic civilization. Because they had that duty, they couldn't, you know, be doing work all day because their work was studying the Vedic literature and teaching it to others. So you spend, and they also, of course, had the aptitude for it. A lot of people don't have that aptitude, or they don't have the intellectual capacity or the interest. You know, someone can spend eight hours working the field, but ask them to read for 8 hours, and you know, they'll be sleeping for 7.5 probably. So the Brahmins had that capacity and the intellectual capacity and the will and the desire. And because they were giving knowledge to others, they were highly respected. In fact, Prabhupada, he put blame on Brahmanas for what happened to the civilization of India, how it went downhill so much, it became so corrupt and lost so much of the pure influence of the Vedas, Vedic culture over the years. Things degraded so much. And he said it was because the Brahmanas didn't share their wisdom. He actually, you know, put the blame like that. They're the responsible. They're the heads of society. They have to think and do the right thing and teach others. And that didn't happen. So in ideal Vedic culture, the Brahmins actually knew. They actually knew how to live life. And, of course, they were ably assisted by their wives. And the wives, of course, were, again, they were there to help nurture the children. Of course, the main idea of motherhood, of course, is nurturing, taking care, and so on, seeing to the needs of the child. So Brahmani is the third one. Then the next is Raja Patnika, which means the way it's stated is the wife of the king. So, of course, that means a queen. But, of course, traditionally in Vedic
civilization, it was all, there was no queens in charge traditionally throughout the Indian history. It was always the kings. It was run by kings, a patriarchal society, but the queen was given great respect, and we have so many glorious queens we hear about in the Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti, for example, and of course she took on great responsibility raising her children, the five Pandavas. She's highly honored. We have a whole book about her. Srila Prabhupada, he loved her prayers so much, Queen Kunti, because the whole mood of them is so wonderful, how she's praising Krishna. The setting is, of course, Krishna had spent some time in Hastinapur, where Queen Kunti and the Pandavas were living. And then after the Battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna was going to return to Dwarka. So he was just getting ready to leave. And then Kunti Devi went before him and offered prayers to him. Well, these are very wonderful prayers. In the eighth chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, they're very instructive, and Prabhupada liked them. There's actually a recording of Srila Prabhupada chanting these prayers. There aren't very many recordings of Prabhupada chanting shlokas. There's some from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and there's this chapter is available. You can listen to Prabhupada chanting these. So he liked these very much. So then, of course, he spoke. When Prabhupada would speak, he would choose what section of the Bhagavatam he wanted to speak from. So he spoke on Kapiladeva's teachings. He spoke on Rishabhdev's teachings. He spoke on Prahlad's prayers. He tended to choose instructional sections of the Bhagavatam rather than narrative sections where teachings are there. So he also spoke on the Queen Kunti's teachings. And then later, all of Prabhupada's lectures were put together with the verses and purports from that section of the Bhagavatam, the prayers of Queen Kunti. So they're very wonderful and highly respected prayers in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the next one is, so Raja Patnika, then Dhenu. Dhenu means the cow. This is, of course, in Western civilization, people belittle this idea. When I was first married, there was a cow, and we were living in Potomac, my wife and I, and my mother-in-law and her, she was a little older lady, but she had a boyfriend. She came with a boyfriend, and there was a cow there, Krishi. Any of you who were in Potomac may know Krishi. So he was this big guy, like big cowboy kind of guy, you know. He said, "Boy, look at this beef walking around here," you know. So that was how he responded to the cow. "I want to eat the cow." So we think how barbaric, you know, to have that consciousness. So that's, to a devotee, of course, it's unthinkable to kill the cow or to kill any animal, but especially the cow. And Prabhupada, of course, he would say that the bull is the father. In the traditional culture, of course, the bull is used to till the fields, so produce the grains, produce the food to feed the family. So like that, the bull is the father, and the mother gives milk, so she's the mother. And of course, milk is so important. It's so amazing, you go to the grocery store and that whole dairy section, so many things, a whole wall full of products just coming from the cow. But then, of course, the cow is mistreated in modern dairy industry. Everything becomes industrialized and polluted in modern civilization. But in traditional culture, the cow, of course, was so important. Every family had at least one cow, and they took care of the cow. And of course, it wasn't, even economically, didn't make sense to kill the cow and eat the cow. The cow provided so much for years and years and years. It was a great wealth. In fact, Prabhupada said a wealthy person was evaluated, his wealth was evaluated by how many cows he had. And we hear in the Bhagavatam so many times, Krishna gave away so many cows, tens of thousands of cows every day in Dwarka to the Brahmanas. And all rich kings, they always gave away cows, especially to the Brahmanas, because they were so valuable. Cows are so valuable. Of course, we have the special cow called the Kamadhenu. Kama means desire, so the cow that will fulfill all your desires. Like the Surabhi cow in the spiritual world. Anything you want from the Surabhi cow, you can get. Of course, what does Prabhupada say? Anything the devotee wants for his service to Krishna. The devotee doesn't have any other desire, and the Kamadhenu can supply that. So naturally, the cow is honored. In fact, we even worship, especially on Govardhan Puja, Go Puja. We do actual artik to the cow. I'm sure anyone first visiting the temple will see that, probably is a little surprised. Oh, they're worshiping the cow. Wow. But she deserves. Actually, you might say it's a kind of a symbolic thing, because it's not really that we're worshiping the jiva in the body of the cow. We're worshiping what the cow represents and what the cow is providing to human society. So it's an honorable thing to do, to appreciate and express one's gratitude. So give the cow some sweet, big sweet balls on Go Puja Day. Make them happy. Actually, it's said that all the demigods reside in the hair holes of the cow. So if you pet a cow, then you're pleasing. The demigods become pleased just to see you. Actually, there's so many verses in the Vedic literature glorifying the cow. Some of them have been compiled. All the auspicious results of taking care of the cow. Gomata Seva is a very important part, a very essential foundation of Vedic culture, Krishna conscious culture. So that's Dhenu, and then the next one is Dhatri. Dhatri means a nurse. Now that doesn't mean registered nurse, it means wet nurse. Of course, in traditional cultures all over the world, this was a common practice. Of course, it was even, you know, in Western culture up to a certain time, at least the aristocracy, aristocratic ladies tended to have nurses take care of right after birth, actually. And it still goes on in some cultures around the world. I know in Islamic culture, they do that. It's not uncommon. And it's considered to the relationship between the nurse and the child is a very intimate one. Of course, you can just imagine the act itself is so intimate. What is more intimate than that, giving your breast milk to a baby? So it's a very wonderful thing. And so that a lady who is doing that, it's a very honorable occupation. There are ladies who would have that, as you might say, as an occupation, at least for some time. I was saying, actually, it goes on today, too, in some ways. I know they have, like, milk banks, I think, for ladies who can't produce milk themselves. And in some limited way, it goes on. And I'm sure ladies who take advantage of that feel some appreciation for women who do that. So at least in former times, it was integral to Vedic civilization. Even Krishna had nurses. We hear that there were nurses, so apparently they were that kind of nurse in Krishna's life. And we have this extraordinary nurse, Putana. She tried to kill Krishna with her breast milk because she was a demoness. But just because she pretended to be a mother, Krishna accepted her as a real mother, a nurse, mother as a nurse, and he gave her that position eternally in the spiritual world. So it's such an extraordinary thing when Uddhava is speaking to Vidura. Yes, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. No, there's, yes, Uddhava. So he recalls this. He's thinking of Krishna's pastimes, and he recalls this incident of Putana and how Krishna gave her that incredible a mercy. So he said, of whom should one take shelter? Who was the person who is so merciful is Krishna. How could anybody show such mercy? This person came to kill him, and he gave her the eternal position as his nurse in the spiritual world. So that's that story's in the Bhagavatam because it's so exceptional, it's so amazing. The extraordinary exhibition of Krishna's mercy. So that was one dhatri, one nurse, Dhenu dhatri, tata prithvi. So the last one is prithvi. Prithvi means the earth planet, the earth planet. Of course, even today we say Mother Earth. And Prabhupada explained, he said, yes, the earth is the source of all the children. Any body in this material world comes from the earth. That's where the elements that make up the body come from. Thus thou art. To dust thou shalt return. So that's about our material body. So we're all products of the earth in that sense, in the sense that we are bodies, embodied beings, the bodies that we have. Of course, especially to get the human body is a very wonderful thing. We have pastimes in the Bhagavatam, the famous story of Prithu Maharaj and Mother Earth. started off a little uncomfortable relationship between the two, because she wasn't producing. If you know the story, it's from the fourth canto. Prithu Maharaj, he was an empowered incarnation of Krishna. His very name is related to the name for the earth. And when he took over after his appearance, then the citizens were starving. They came to him. And so he approached earth, personified in the form of a cow, actually. And he was very heavy with her. He said, you have to produce. Now, she had an excuse. She said, well, I'm not being served the way I'm supposed to. I'm supposed to be given certain kinds of offerings. So a little debate went on there, but still the king wasn't satisfied. But ultimately, she said, okay. She said, I'll take in the form of a cow. People can milk me. So there's this whole amazing chapter of the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam where different entities take the forms of calves and they milk different things from Mother Earth in the form of a cow. There's one place there, I'm pretty sure one of the purports where Prabhupada says, basically, it's okay if you take this metaphorically, but we can take the lesson from it that Mother Earth is providing everything for all, actually different kinds of entities all over the universe were being satisfied and taking advantage of the generosity of Mother Earth because she took that form of a cow to supply the needs of so many living entities. So that's the seven mothers. Actually, when I was looking at, this always happens, I have to give the Sunday feast lecture. What am I going to talk about? You know? It's easier when you give Bhagavatam class because that's what you had to talk about. So I was like, what am I going to talk about? So I thought, well, maybe some holy day. So I looked at, oh, it's Mother's Day. All right, I can talk about mothers. So immediately I thought of the seven mothers. But then later, as I was, you know, this was a couple of weeks ago, I started thinking about different things, and I thought, gee, I could give the class about only one mother if I wanted to. I could talk about Mother Yashoda the whole time, or Mother Sachi Devi, how Krishna loves his mothers, obviously. And this comes up in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. If you read Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we hear both in the Bhagavatam and in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, the Lord's relationship with his mother, especially these two. So it's, Lord Chaitanya, it's described as toward the end, it's in the Anchakanda chapter 4 of Chaitanya Bhagavat, around verse 200 something, late 200s if you ever want to look it up. So Lord Chaitanya gives this amazing monologue, you might say, glorifying his mother. It's like extraordinary. You're the mother of the universe and all the other incarnations of the. You are all the other the mother of all the other incarnations of the Lord, and so on. And I can never repay you. And that you've given me, you know, Krishna, and basically, it's extraordinary glorification of her. And there it comes out. It may be in Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary, where he says, therefore, Lord Chaitanya is very pleased when you call him Sachi Nandana. He loves being called Suchinandana because it reminds him of his mother, whom he loved so much. Of course, in other places in Lord Chaitanya's Leela also, his mother, because you know the agonizing scene, of course, it's spiritual ecstasy, but when he's leaving his mother, 24 years old, he's leaving his young wife and his mother to take sannyas, and really, really heavy scene there, actually. But Lord Chaitanya, he talks to her and he relieves her anxiety and her feelings of separation somewhat by explaining, basically talking philosophy to her, helping her understand who she actually is and who he is and their eternal relationship and there's really no separation and, you know, looking at things from a higher perspective, you might say. So it helps relieve her somewhat. But of course, it never goes away if she's always feeling separation from the Lord. Lord Chaitanya goes and takes sannyas and then on his way back, he's going to Jagannath Puri. Well, first he goes to the house of Advaita Acharya. And there are different narrations of the story, but one idea we get there is that it's when he was at the house of Advaita Acharya in Shantipur, of course, that's a little ways away from Navadvipa where Mother Sachi was in Mayapur. So Lord Chaitanya said, call all my devotees from Navadvipa and call Mother Sachi to come here. So Mother Sachi, of course, she's so excited to go. She's carried there in a palanquin. In those days, the ladies would be carried here and there often. And so she arrives there, And Lord Chaitanya spends some days there, several days. And he says, I just want you to cook for me. And this is her highest ecstasy. Of course, there's nothing that she loves more than cooking for her Nimai, her son, who she loves more than life itself. And then some places it's presented that she gave the recommendation that he stay at Jagannath Puri, because the devotees in Mayapur are always going to Jagannath Puri because of the Jagannath Rath Yatra especially. So there are many devotees of Lord Jagannath in Navadvip, Mayapur. So Mother Sachi said, therefore I can always be getting news of you. So that would happen, of course, when Lord Chaitanya was in Puri. The devotees would go every year, a group of them, which is an amazing story in itself. It's something like 500 miles, something like that. So it would take, I don't know, a month to walk there, something like that, several weeks. And just think of the arrangement. Sometimes there was up to 200 devotees. And this devotee, Shivananda Sena, had to arrange for all of that. And it was at the time when the culture was not, it was controlled by the antagonistic Muslims at that time. And just crossing borders was extremely dangerous. You could get murdered. And then to try to find housing and food all the way along the way, just imagine how difficult that was. So in any case, they would do it. And then that Mother Sachi would get news. And one thing Mother Sachi would experience was when she would make an offering to her deities and her son at the same time, that sometimes the food would disappear. And so Lord Chaitanya, he knew about that. He said, tell my mother that she's not dreaming. This is, I actually go there and eat the food. She shouldn't think that she's just hallucinating. Actually, I do go there and I eat the offerings. So, of course, one devotee was sent in to tell her that. And, of course, that was wonderful for her to hear. My Nimai is actually coming. I'm still cooking for him and he's still coming to eat. And, of course, Mother Yashoda in Vrindavan, she, one of the places where Yashoda's attachment to Krishna, of course, there's so many pastimes. Some of them are extraordinary. When we read about Krishna's leelas in Vrindavan, we always know, of course, everything turns out well. But if you look at them on, you know, from an ordinary perspective, you might say, really heavy tragedies took place, disasters took place repeatedly in Vrindavan. From that perspective, think of Trinavarta. So she's busy. She sets her little boy, I don't know how old he was, very small, 1 year old, I think he was. She sets him in the courtyard, and she goes inside to do some household work. And all of a sudden, a storm comes up, basically like a tornado. You know how heavy those are, what these tornadoes do. Everything became completely black. Nobody could see anything. They were completely blinded by it. And poor Mother Yashoda, she's like, my baby, oh my God. She didn't know anything. She just went out, finally she went out, and she was sitting there, and she was just crying and crying. She didn't know where her baby was. But of course, what happened, you know, the story, Krishna, this Trinavarti brought Krishna up into the sky, like a tornado, and then Krishna grabbed him by the throat and killed him and threw him down on a slab of concrete or some kind of heavy stone in the courtyard and smashed him. So then he was just playing there and laughing, and the gopi, her gopi friends, the elder gopis, her mature gopis, adult gopis, they said, "Oh, here's your child." So then she's reunited with her child. So, but it's so heavy what she went through, that kind of separation. And when, of course, when Krishna went to Mathura, that was also unbearable to her. And because she didn't go to Mathura, the cowherd men went and she stayed. No, she was there, I'm sorry, but she left before the cowherd men, before Nanda Maharaj left. So she was actually expecting that Krishna was going to return. But Krishna told his father, no, we have to stay here because our parents have been, you know, tortured here and so many horrible things, and we have to help the Yadus, they're our family and so on, Krishna and Balaram. So Mother Yashoda, of course, when she heard that news, when her husband returned, then what did she do? She just cried and cried and cried. When Uddhava goes there to bring the message to the Brijavasis, short time after, not very long later. So Uddhava is talking to Nanda Maharaj. Actually, he speaks philosophy to him. actually your son is God, and you know, you're always, he's always with you, you're always with him, and so on. But Mother Yashoda doesn't hear anything. All she doesn't see anything, because all she does is cry. Her eyes are full of tears and her mind is full of separation from Krishna, so she doesn't hear. So she's actually, in what she's usually represented as more, her love for Krishna is deeper than that of Nanda Maharaj. She's especially the emblem. The mother is especially the emblem of the Vatsalya Rasa. Of course, Nanda Maharaj and the elder cowherd men and so on, they also have, of course, great affection. We don't want to minimize them. But the mother is especially considered to be the epitome and the ideal of that parental relationship with the child. So we see that exhibited in Vedic culture in so many ways. We have, you know, different mothers come up in the Srimad Bhagavatam in different stories. Of course, we have the one of Uttara. She had King Parikshit within her womb, and what's instructive there is that what happened, this was also just was around the time when Kunti Devi offered her prayers and Krishna was leaving. He was just about to leave. Again, he was on his chariot and getting ready to leave. And she ran up to him and she had the child within her womb. And she said, this fiery weapon is coming towards me. And she said, it's all right if it kills me, but don't let it kill the child within my womb. Even if I die, that's okay, but don't, please protect my child. So she went, she prayed to Krishna like that. That was her mood. And of course, Krishna did. He went into her womb and his club, I think it was, right? Yeah, his club in his hand. And he was whirling it like a firebrand. And of course, he protected the embryo, the child within the womb. The last member of the Kuru dynasty, so it was very important that he was saved. And then Parikshit Maharaj is such an important character in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But that was her mood. So naturally, the mother, this maternal instinct is there. I remember this incident, this came to mind many years ago. I was at the Berkeley Temple, and there was a lady there. Her name was Lola Devi, and she was pregnant. And she was told, I don't know if I have this exactly right, but I think she was told that unless you abort, you may die giving birth to this child. So they were recommending that she abort the child. But she said, no, I'll die, but I'm not going to abort my child. So what happened was they both survived. They both survived the childhood. So it came out auspicious. But she had this mood. No, she had maternal instinct. No, I'm not going to do that. I don't care what the consequences are. So this is, now of course Prabhupada would say, I'll end on this, that what is the chanting of Hare Krishna is like the child crying out for the mother. Naturally, the child cries out for the mother because the mother gives protection. The mother is the, you know, main guardian for the child. In fact, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I'm the father, I'm the mother, I'm Pita and Mata. So Krishna, actually, he also fills that role. Actually, also another, I was thinking, I could give a class on one mother. Then who's the original mother is Srimati Radharani. We tend not to think of her as a mother because she doesn't have children, but we're all her children. And of course, all of the wives of the avatars are expansions of Srimati Radharani, and some of them have children. So she's actually, and that the maternal instinct, you might say, comes out of Srimati Radharani ultimately. And she's also called Jagat Mata, the mother of the universe, just as Lord Chaitanya called his mother Sachi Devi. So Srimati Radharani is our mother. We call out to her and when we chant Hare Krishna. It's interesting, I often think of this. And Prabhupada gave this example that chanting Hare Krishna is like a child crying for the mother. And he said the perfection of life is to learn to cry like this. So we're supposed to be chanting Hare Krishna constantly. That means our lives are supposed to be full of crying. We're supposed to live our lives crying out. So what does it mean? Of course, naturally, we live in a horrible, if we realize it, what a horrible situation it is to be in a material body. Prabhupada would use the term embarrassed. We're embarrassed. Of course, he used embarrassed in a different way, but we can also take it that way. Oh, this is embarrassing. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. I'm in this body made of all these horrible things. So we should be crying for that reason. Of course, that's not really what the cry is about. The cry is about wanting to serve Krishna. That's what we're supposed to be. That's the mood of, that's what chanting Hare Krishna is. It's not about even, oh, I want to be a cowherd boy, then I can play with Krishna and have so much fun. But no, Krishna wants cowherd boys. That's how he wants to be served. He wants friends. So maybe I could be one of those friends. Krishna, please engage me in your service. Every day we worship Tulsi Devi. That prayer, if you're actually thinking of what it's saying, we're asking to be servants of the gopis. That's such an intimate prayer. I always think, boy, Prabhupada gave us this prayer. Sometimes I think, how can I even say this prayer? It's such an elevated prayer, actually. But Prabhupada gave it to us. So, of course, you know, those of you who worship Tulsi Devi, you should have great respect for that prayer because it's not a light thing what we're asking for. So anyway, so Tulsi is another one of our mothers. You know, she's connecting us with our Supreme Father, Lord Krishna. So we can have gratitude for our earthly mothers and various kinds of earthly mothers, but also our spiritual transcendental mothers that we beg for their mercy. The mothers has a soft heart, so we beg for their mercy so that we can get the mercy of Krishna and attain the service of their lotus feet, the lotus feet of Radha Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Any reflection, question, comment?
He didn't have a question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
I also had this question. Why did Parashuram kill his own mother?
Parashuram?
Yeah.
Because he knew what his father would do. Prabhupada explains that in his purport. Those of you who don't know the story, Parashuram was an incarnation of the Lord. He's the one who killed the ruling class because they had become demoniac, basically. So he incarnated. Prabhupada calls him a Shaktyavesha avatar, actually. So in any case, so his mother had a impure thought. She saw a Gandharva, a heavenly man, being enjoying with other women, and she kind of thought, you might say, lustily, momentarily. And when she went home, she had gone to get water from the Ganges, I think it was something. She was outside the home. She came home, and her husband, who was of great elevated soul, he could understand that she had had this in her mind, this infidelity. So he said, he ordered his sons, he had, what was it, two other sons? I forget. It's other sons. He ordered them to kill your mother. So they refused. They wouldn't do it. And then he asked Parashuram, his youngest son, to kill your mother and your brothers. So, yeah, it was an amazing story. So he did it, actually. So then he knew what his father would do. This is of course, the purport. He had so much faith in his father. He said, my father is so powerful. He's so pure. He's such a great yogi and such a great devotee. He can do anything, basically. So his father said, oh, you've done this. You've pleased me very much. So what would you like in return? And he said, please bring them all back to life and make it so that they don't know that this ever happened. So that's exactly what happened. So that's why he did it, because he had so much faith and love and honor for his father. He was completely sure. Otherwise, he would never have done it, obviously. So he was completely sure that my father is going to, that this won't be a problem. They won't even remember that it took place. So, of course, the Bhagavatam is full of extraordinary stories like this, and we get help from the acharyas to understand them and gain lessons from them. Yes, Vegavati Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much. Such a nice class. Two things. One, just when I drove to the springs today, I happened to see a calf drinking from its mother, and I thought, oh, how auspicious, you know,
yeah.
Even though I believe they were being raised.
I saw a deer drinking from its mother the other day.
Oh my goodness.
It seems to be the time for the little fawns. I've been
Krishna,
seeing them.
Krishna. But also, just another point, because you mentioned, was it Uddhava talking to Maitreya and saying, who could be more merciful than Krishna?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was remembering, that was the very verse that when Gadadhar Pandit, who is the actual incarnation of Radharani, had a doubt about Pundarik Vidyaniti, right, who's actually Vrishabhanu in Gauralila, how can this wealthy person who's being served with silks and all these fragrant oils, and I'm so renounced my whole life, how can this person be a devotee? Mukunda brought me to see him. And then Mukunda could understand his mind, and he started singing that very verse, which caused, of course...
Right. Actually, it's a very popular verse among Vaishnavas to quote. There's another, you know, there's a story that Shukadeva Goswami, he left home as soon as he was born. And his father cried out. Only the trees echoed in response, as the Bhagavatam tells us. So, but he was still living in the forest nearby. And when Vyasadeva would send, when his students would go out into the woods, he would have them chant different verses. So it's said there that, I don't know if this is recorded anywhere, but somehow Vaishnavas have had this realization that one of those verses was this particular verse that attracted Shukadeva Goswami to return and learn, study the Bhagavatam from his father Vyasadeva. How merciful is Lord Krishna for what he did for Putana. Okay, is that it? Oh, there we go. Ruchira.
Thank you for the wonderful class.
Is it, I think, check, the, is a yellow, a green light on? Okay, I'm not hearing.
I was just thinking, one time, one Gujarati lady came to our house, and she said, you know, when we were young, we would go and whisper in the cow's ear to help us with our tests at school. Because she's the mother, so she would give us help.
Yeah. Ruchira, if you those of you who don't know, she milks cows every day. She milks a cow. My wife and I buy milk from them. It's a wonderful, wonderful service that they're doing. Ruchira and her family taking care, doing that Gomata Seva, providing fresh, pure cow's milk, undoctored by pasteurization and other unthinkable things. It's actually not this real milk. When it comes straight from the cow, that's real milk. That's what we're meant to drink. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.